Chapter 45, The Struggle Between Church and State. The winter of the year 1076 to 1077 was severe, very severe. The snow lay thick on the fields and the roads, and the frost continued for weeks on a stretch. About Christmas of 1076, a small group of people travel in the bitter cold through Germany to the south. Finally, they come to the Alps and travel over those high mountains. Below, at the foot of the mountain and in the valleys, it is not so bad. There, at least, they are protected against the icy wind. However, the higher they go, the colder it becomes. There is nothing which offers them any protection. How bitter cold it must have been there. Brr. As a matter of fact, it is no weather to now make that long and dangerous journey over the inhospitable Alps. Would it not have been wiser to wait with that until the summer months? Even then, especially in those days, a journey over the Alps was still very dangerous. But to undertake that journey in the dead of the winter, while the snow covers the mountain roads with a thick layer and makes them almost impassable, while the frost is biting so severely, it is truly foolishness. That journey is now at the risk of life. Yea, all that is true, but it is a must. They cannot wait till summer, for it is urgent. Who then are those travelers, and where are they going? Even a woman and child is with them. Behold, they have finally reached the highest peaks. They go over those tops and descend on the other side to the bottom. That descending is even more dangerous than the ascending of the mountain. One misstep, and they shall plunge down into the dizzying depths. Death lurks from all sides. Yawning abysses grin at them. The roads that are covered with ice and snow offer them no hold for their tired feet. Clefts and crevices have become invisible by the snow. Shall not their maimed bodies shortly serve as food for the birds of prey? No, it is going well. Now they are in Italy. Finally, the towers of a castle loom up in the distance. Fine, for that castle is the object of their journey. There they shall be able to warm their benumbed limbs. In the meantime, it has already become the second half of January, 1077. Thus, this journey has lasted several weeks. But now the end is in sight. Ever clearer, the towers are outlined against the clear, frosty sky. That castle is situated close to the village of Canossa in northern Italy. When they get closer, then the woman and child stay behind. Perhaps they find lodging in an inn, a sort of hotel. Dressed in a penitential robe and barefooted, the man goes on further all alone. He draws near to the castle gate. He knocks and desires to be admitted. But the gate of that castle remains shut. They let that benumbed traveler stand outside. Brr, how cold it is! Again, again, and again, the knocker falls upon the door. However, it is of no use. The heavy doors remain shut. To warm himself somewhat, the man saunters back and forth. Hour after hour goes by. It becomes evening. It becomes night. The cold increases again, but the gates remain shut. Dressed only in a penitential robe and barefooted, that man waits 3 days and 3 nights, and then in that biting cold. But why does he do that then? Why does he not go back home? Why does he not look for a heated room? Who really is that man? That lonesome penitent before the gate of that castle is the German Emperor. What? The German Emperor? Does the Emperor stand 3 days and 3 nights in the snow, waiting to be admitted? Perhaps some will look up quite unbelievingly. Yea, and yet it is true, however unbelievable it may sound. Who then is that German Emperor, and why does he humble himself like that? Those emperors were usually not such humble people. Yea, how that came about is quite a story. Just listen. In the year 1056, a young prince ascended the German emperor's throne. His name was Henry IV. He was a vigorous emperor, one who knew what he wanted. Although he was still young, yet he ruled with a firm hand, and he did not allow himself to be trifled with. He demanded obedience from all his subjects. However, that was not to the liking of the German dukes and nobles. They wanted to remain boss themselves, and did not want to become a page of the emperor. What did that young emperor imagine himself to be? He must not think that they would permit themselves to be pushed aside just like that. Very soon, Henry IV got into great difficulties with the German nobles. To be sure, they obeyed him because they had to, but spite and resentment increased in their hearts. In order not to stand alone in the struggle with those nobles, Henry IV appointed various bishops to whom he at the same time gave large tracts of land. It was self-evident that those bishops supported their emperor. But the emperor joined heartily in the simony. Also here, whosoever offered the most money had the best chance of being appointed. Just at that time, the Pope of Rome issued his first ecclesiastical laws, which would help to free the church from the world. His chief advisor in this was Hildebrand, about whom we told you in the previous chapter. Henry IV just simply laughed about that. As we already know, Hildebrand became pope in 1073, and then it really started. Hildebrand, or Gregory VII, made one regulation after another. He forbade simony. He forbade the appointing of bishops and other clergymen by secular rulers, hence the investiture. That was all well and good, but the youthful Henry IV ignored all those commands from Rome. He quietly continued to appoint bishops because he could not lose the support of those bishops in his struggle with the German nobles who crossed him in every way. Ah, Henry had flung more commands of the Pope to the wind. That had always turned out well, even though the commands came from Hildebrand as advisor. But then Hildebrand did not have the power to enforce his will. Now Hildebrand had become Pope himself. But that made no difference to the German Emperor. He supposed it would still go well. But in this, however, he was greatly mistaken. Gregory the Seventh was a real ruler with an inflexible will. But Henry the Fourth was also a ruler. He also carried his will through. Gregory the Seventh wanted to free the church from the world. The emperor must not rule over the church, but papacy must rule over the state. But Henry the Fourth did not want to give up his great influence in the church. He simply did not consider that at all. Everyone can understand that it had to come to a clash between these two rulers. Both had great power. Gregory was the Pope of the Church. Henry the Fourth was the powerful Emperor of the German Empire. Because of this, that clash was so severe. Neither one yielded an inch. In spite of the command from Rome, which strictly forbade simony, Henry the Fourth simply continued with that and acted as if no papal command existed. However, the Pope went on with it and decided to put an end to that by force. The obstinate German emperor must and had to bow before him. He had to obey, whether he wanted to or not. 5 advisers of Henry the Fourth, who had received their appointment from him, were excommunicated by Gregory. At first, the emperor thought, don't let me provoke a quarrel, and to please the Pope, he discharged them. Gregory smiled shrewdly. That was better than expected. But after a lapse of a few weeks, the emperor regretted his decision to obey the Pope in this because he realized that it would not remain with this. Henry the Fourth thought, I won't do it after all. I do not intend to be the Pope's page. And do you know what he did then? He reappointed those 5 advisers. When Gregory heard that, he was very angry. He sent some papal ambassadors to the German emperor with the threat, if you do not immediately discharge those advisers, then I shall excommunicate you. Henry IV laughed scornfully. He could find a way out of that. He called his friends, the German bishops, together, and at that assembly the Pope was simply deposed. The emperors were accustomed to do that, weren't they? They could appoint the popes, but if they desired, they could also depose them. Gregory heard what the German emperor had done. He became red with rage, and to avenge himself, he excommunicated Henry the Fourth. Besides, he sent a letter to the German nobles and to the German people, in which he wrote that they need no longer obey their emperor. Ha, said the German nobles, we need no longer obey the emperor. We told you already that those nobles hated their emperor because they could not tolerate his ambition for power. Now they had a nice opportunity to push their enemy aside. Now Henry the Fourth was put into a most difficult position, for he was told, unless you see to it that within a year you are discharged from that excommunication, we shall choose a new emperor. They really were of the opinion that he would not be successful in that. They said to each other, he won't be successful in that anyway. Those nobles also wrote a letter to the Pope with the request, won't you please come to Germany, for then together we can discuss which emperor we want. Gregory laughed in his sleeve. He thought, this way suits me very well. All of them must listen to me. All of them must obey me. Besides, I shall decide who is going to rule over Germany. For that reason, he eagerly accepted their suggestion. Soon after that, he left Rome and began his journey to Germany. He must take advantage of that splendid opportunity. On his way to the north, he arrives at the Italian town of Canosa. A female friend of his, a certain Countess Mathilda, lived there. She had often helped him when he came into difficulties. Since he was so close to her castle, for that reason Pope Gregory decided to pay her a visit. Just at that time, the frost set in, and it became bitter cold. Gregory did not feel like crossing the Alps during this cold spell. For that reason, he lodged for the time being at the castle of Countess Matilda at Canosa. And, behold, while he is warming himself at the cheerfully burning fire on the hearth, suddenly the German emperor appears, barefooted and wrapped in a penitential robe, before the castle gate and desires to be admitted. That was a sad disappointment in the expectations of Gregory, because he had not reckoned on that in the least. This put Gregory in a difficult position, because he realized very well that this was a cunning move on the part of the German emperor. He did not feel like meeting his enemy, but on the other hand, as priest, he could not deny a penitent. He really did not know what to do. For 3 days and three nights he let the German emperor stand in the snow and in the cold. He hoped secretly that the emperor would go away in anger, but in that he was mistaken. Henry IV did not think about going away. There was too much at stake for him, and he knew that as priest, the Pope could not refuse to pardon him. For that reason, in spite of all, he held out. Now we know at once why Henry IV traveled to Canosa and why he waited so patiently all those days in the cold. He had to, because otherwise he would lose the imperial crown of Germany. Behold, there sits the Pope in the large hall of the castle in which Countess Matilda lives. She herself sits next to him and advises him. It is best that you have the gate opened. It has lasted long enough now. Also, the other friends of the Pope give him the same advice. Gregory still hesitates. You may be sure that he did not have it easy. Finally, he decides, "Go ahead, then. Let him come in." A servant hastens outside, and finally the heavy doors turn open. Chilled to the bone, Henry IV enters. In his heart, he is furious at the Pope, who left him standing waiting so long. But he does not say that. He knows better. Else the Pope will drive him away immediately. Then his journey to Italy would have failed completely. For that reason, he does not let it appear what goes on within him. With bowed head, apparently very reverently, the emperor draws near to the throne upon which the Pope is seated. When he finally stands before him, he kneels down and asks to be pardoned. He promises that from now on he shall obey the Pope. Humbly he requests if the Pope will be so kind to remove the excommunication. It is dead silent in the large hall. They all hold their breath, intensely await the answer of Gregory. What shall he say? The Pope wages a severe struggle, yet he realizes that he must give in. Finally, Gregory raises his head and solemnly says, "Because you have come so humbly to ask this of me, I pardon you and remove the excommunication." Apparently very friendly, the emperor answers, "Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly." He arises from his kneeled position and departs. It is a good thing that the Pope does not see the flashing in the eyes of the emperor. But Henry IV controls himself. He was successful after all, and although hatred is aroused in his heart against the man who humbled him so deeply, he comforts himself with the thought, "Just wait, my time is coming too." Firmly and surely, he shall avenge himself. With his wife and child, he hastily travels back to Germany. But when he enters his palace again, he hears that during his absence, the German nobles have chosen another emperor, a certain Rudolf. From all this, it is clear that the German nobles wanted to get rid of him. But the bishops decide to support Henry IV again. He has now been absolved of his ban, has he not? Thus, at present, there are two emperors in Germany. The German nobles with their armies support Rudolf, the new emperor, but the German bishops with their soldiers support Henry IV. A civil war has broken out in Germany. As a matter of fact, the Pope should have supported Henry IV, for had he not absolved him of the ban and granted forgiveness? However, this he did not do. He did not trouble himself with that. He thought, "I will first wait and see who is going to win." War breaks out, and the army of Henry IV is defeated by the army of Emperor Rudolf. Gregory thinks, "That's fine. Rudolf is the victor." And now he did a foolish thing. Again he excommunicated Henry IV. That was not honest, because there was now no reason for that. The German people thought so too, and they decided to support their lawful emperor in spite of the papal ban. Very soon, Henry IV had assembled a powerful army. For the second time, he marches to war against his opponent Rudolf. Rudolf is defeated and killed in that battle. Now Henry IV is a lone boss again. He thinks, "Now I shall at the same time avenge myself upon the Pope." He marches to Rome and lays siege to that city. The struggle continued for 3 years. Then Rome is taken, and at the head of his conquering troops, Henry IV enters victoriously the ancient metropolis. The German soldiers plunder Rome. Gregory himself has an opportunity to escape from the Germans. He succeeds in leaving Rome. He never again returned to Rome. Some years later, in 1085, he died in exile. While Henry was in Rome, he immediately appointed a new pope. Most of the cardinals did not dare to oppose the German emperor and acknowledged the new pope. Gregory was left in the lurch by them. Henry IV, the powerful German emperor, had obtained the victory. The humiliation put upon him was avenged. It seemed as if the state had triumphed over the church. But later popes have continued the work of Gregory. That investiture struggle has lasted for many years. To tell you all about that cannot be done. Just bear in mind that finally not the German emperors, but the popes of Rome obtained the victory. Not the state, but the ecclesiastical power has triumphed.